I am here. Here, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Well, welcome. I want to welcome all of our pastors for joining us. Thank you for taking time out of no doubt busy schedules as we approach what is my favorite time of year as we get into Christmas. Not only the time with family and friends, but at the time that probably the closest we come in the nation to focusing on our Christian faith. And so Merry Christmas to everyone. Let me move quickly through a number of issues I want to talk to you about. Let me just put it in this context of, I think it's absolutely critical that you know what's going on in the nation from our perspective here in Washington, D.C., and what we see coming down the line, and how critical your engagement and your involvement is. And I'm not talking about involvement in political, I'm talking about praying, informed, being knowledgeable. But I think we as a nation stand at a crossroads now. Someone said we've been here before. We have. We have been here before, but the stakes are higher. The outcomes, I think, from the decisions that we make in the next year or so will ultimately decide the fate of this country. And things are pretty scary when you look behind the scenes and see what's happening in some of the conversations that we have. In fact, this morning I've been involved in some confidential meetings with a number of potential presidential candidates. There's a group of us.
What did you do?
And finding out where they stand on the issues and analysis of how they see the landscape and so on and so forth. And I will be sharing that with our pastors later on as that process unfolds. Let me start actually with some good news of how things can be impacted and transformed. I just stepped out of the radio studio where I was doing an interview with Bill O'Reilly from the O'Reilly Factor. He has a new book out, Culture Warrior. It's quite interesting. I asked him his worldview, and he describes himself as a traditionalist. I don't think a man of an evangelical of faith. I'm not sure where he comes from faith perspective, but he understands the issues that are striking at the heart of our country. And in part of our conversation, he talked about how we can be successful and how we have been successful on the issue of Christmas. But just in the last year, we've seen a radical shift because people stood up and said something and pushed back against the anti-Christian culture. And so I just wanted to start with that to tell you we can and we have made a difference, and we can continue to make a difference if we simply stand for those things we believe in.
Just a real quick comment about Bill O'Reilly. He claims on the air to be a Roman Catholic.
He didn't go into his faith perspective, but more on his focus on the policy and just giving his observations. But let me answer a question that's been asked of me quite a bit, is kind of an analysis of the election. What does this mean? Where do we stand? I'm not going to candy coat it. It was bad. The election results have shifted the powers in Congress to the point where we've even seen the bipartisan Bible study room shut down on Capitol Hill in the House by the new leadership in the House. We are in for a very difficult time in the next 2 years. Now, let me tell you, they're going to be, I think... Let me step back just a minute and say something else about the election. There have been those that have wanted pronounced values dead, that the traditional values, conservative values, they lost in this election in that chapter of American history. That is absolutely false. That is not true. What has happened in this election is that Democrats, and I don't say this in terms of a partisan perspective, but those that are attached to a liberal agenda learned how to talk conservative, and they out-talked the conservatives on conservative issues. And if I can be very blunt and make a political statement, that the Democrats look more Republican than the Republicans did. And that's why they prevailed. They campaigned as pro-faith, pro-God, pro-country. Now, if that's where they are, that is great. And I think we are, as I mentioned earlier, at crossroads, we actually stand at a point where I think it'd be very positive, depending on how we go from here. I think interjecting competition back into the political marketplace is a good thing. To have Democratic candidates and office holders that are pro-God, pro-faith, pro-religious freedom, pro-family, pro-marriage, that is a good thing. What we saw happen, and this is why I believe the Republicans were rejected, is because they became complacent with the support that they had gotten from pro-family, pro-life, pro-faith Americans, and they failed to move forward or live consistently by those principles. Now, from a very practical standpoint, this has had a dynamic shift upon the power structure here in Washington, D.C., with both chambers going into the hands of not those Democrats that campaigned on those issues we just talked about. Those folks are going to be junior, they're freshmen, they're new. The existing power structure of the Democratic Party is extreme to the left. They've been here, most of the leaders have been here for 20 years or more, and they have a very radical agenda. Now, as we see this unfolding, this is how I think they're going to do it, because the stakes are high for them as well as for us. They are going to be very careful, I think, in the next 2 years to try and keep under wraps the more liberal policies of the liberal wing of the Democratic Party, because they know the White House is at stake in 2 years. But they have to advance issues such as hate crimes. That is going to be coming up, I predict, in the first 180 days of this Congress. Now, it may not come up as a standalone bill. In fact, I would almost guarantee you that it will not come up as a standalone bill. It will come up as an attachment, as a rider to another bill that must pass. And even under a Republican Congress, this bill passed the Senate more than two or three times, and it passed the House once. So it is going to pass Congress. I've already had conversations with the White House about whether or not the president would veto the measure. And I am not convinced at this point that the president would veto the hate crimes legislation. So this is an issue we're going to have to watch very closely. Why is it important? Well, this is the first step toward criminalizing Christian speech against homosexuality. But this measure in itself would not do that, but it would create a protected special status for homosexuals against any type of hate crime. The next step to that, which other jurisdictions in this country have already adopted, refers them to speech. So I want to be very clear. This, the bill that they would propose would not criminalize speech, but it's very closely linked to it, as we've seen in South Wales and in England, the United Kingdom, in Sweden and Canada, where pastors have actually been arrested for preaching the gospel based on that. Also, another measure very near and dear to the homosexual community is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, another measure that was passed. There'll probably be a religious exemption at first, exempting religious organizations or churches from hiring homosexuals. But we've seen in the past, once those exemptions are in place and the law passes, those exemptions are taken away. So clearly, at the forefront in this new Congress will be the homosexual agenda. We also see, and they've already stated this, that in the first 100 hours, they will move to further expand federal funding, that's taxpayer-funded embryonic stem cell research, something that this president vetoed last year. They will come back with it, hoping to get a veto-proof majority. We're working now to sign up members of Congress who will stand in support of the veto if the president will veto it a second time. So those are just something that I can tell you in the next 3 to 6 months we will be facing. And there'll be a lot of what is going to be happening will not be in the news. It will not be front page stories. It'll be behind the scene in the switching of personnel, which affects the policy. It will be in the stripping away of abstinence funding, replacing it with condom programs and other forms of sex education. This is a radical shift in the policies of the federal government. And we're going to have to encourage to stand with support and sometimes put pressure upon the White House to stand as the last line of defense for the family against some of these agendas. Now, where do we go from here? Well, first off, as pastors and as Christians, I think our first stop should always be prayer. And we are going to even increase further our efforts and focus on prayer and getting information out, as Pierre Bynum is moving more towards solely focusing on our coordinated prayer effort here at FRC. We need to be in prayer. We need to be in prayer for these leaders, the Democratic leaders that are taking over. Our pastor's council, who met in November, has drafted a letter, and it's being sent to the new Democratic leadership, and letting them know that we're praying for them and encouraging them to ask for prayer for our nation. And so we're going to do what is very difficult for Christians to do, but it's something that we're commanded to do, that we've got to improve our ability to do, and that is to speak the truth in love. And so we're going to do what we're called to do. We're going to stand for the truth in this city, but also at the same time realizing that these are people that we're hoping might be open to the gospel. And we're not going to engage in attacking individuals or people because of their political persuasion or their position persuasion. We're going to stay focused on the issues. Let me talk broader here. From where do we go from here? Obviously, the 2008 presidential elections, it's a process that's already begun, as I mentioned. We'll be seeing many of those candidates, seeing where they stand on the issues. But as Christians, and I'm in this process, I'm not prepared to give you a full-length analysis, but just to kind of share with you where I am personally in this, because I've been involved in politics and elected office and in this ground for a little over 15 years, and so I'm not the most seasoned of our folks, but I think I'm reflective of a lot of people in the church, because I came to public policy because of my faith, because as a Christian I felt that we have an obligation, we have a responsibility to be salt and to be light. And it doesn't matter if we're in the majority or in the minority, that responsibility doesn't leave us. And so we're here out of conviction of standing for the truth. And I don't know where this leads the conservative movement in terms of the Christians' attachment to a particular party. I think this is an opportunity for us to reassess all of that. And as I mentioned earlier, interjecting competition into the political marketplace. As pastors, I want you to pray about something in particular that I'm praying about, that I want you to pray about, that I think may be a part of the future of our involvement as Christians, and I think potentially a solution to the country, is that you begin praying over your congregations as to who the Lord may have in your congregation that is being called to the area of government, and then recognizing those callings of those that you've discipled, you've trained, and stand with them in that call. I think we're at that point where we've found that over the last 30 years or so, that when we find a candidate that comes to us and tells us his qualifications and they're acceptable to us, or they try to make themselves acceptable to us, we're oftentimes disappointed, because once they get elected, then we've got to try and make them to do the right thing. What we need are people who internally are motivated to do the right thing, that are called, that are more concerned about the next election, what voters will say. They're concerned about what will be said by the Lord when they speak before Him on judgment, when they arrive in heaven. You see, I don't talk about that, not knowing about what I talk about, because that's actually how I approached public office when I was elected. I didn't care about it a second term. It's more about doing what I knew was right. And I didn't have to have pastors or people call me and ask me to vote the right way. I was actually calling them to call other people in office to get them to do the right thing. That's the type of people we need in office, regardless of whether they be Democrat, Republican, or Independent. And I think this is one way that we can continue to cross the racial the denominational line, as we've truly become nonpartisan in our participation in the political and governmental process. So I just submit that to you, President, and begin being sensitive to those in your congregation who may be called, like to the mission field, to government. I believe it's a calling that God places upon people. And if the church will not stand with those folks, who will? So that I just kind of share that with you as I'm kind of praying over the future of not only how FRC is going to be addressing a number of these issues, but long-term, how we are going to continue to impact the culture. Let me bring up one other issue, and then we'll move to some questions and see what team they also want to share. Our pastor's briefing, please mark your calendars, May the 9th through the 11th, here in Washington, D.C., at the Hyatt Regency on Capitol Hill, where we were last year. That will be our pastor's briefing, the Watchman on the Wall event. And I want to encourage you to go ahead and mark your calendar. You'll be getting something in the mail about that very soon. With this expansion, I want to tell you, in the past, we've been able to cover all of the calls to the pastors coming to the event. But with the growth of it and the growth of our pastors' outreach and our work with churches, we will continue to pay the cost of the event. All of the meals and the cost of the briefing, FRC will continue to pay for that, so you will not have no pastor to get that. But we will be asking you this year to pay for your hotel costs in order that other pastors may come in and we will be able to expand this. We will also be formally, we shared it with you last year at the pastor's briefing, and now the team, Dr. Kirsten is on staff as our new vice president of pastor's outreach, now called Church Ministries. We are formalizing our principle of 12 outreach as we construct and build informed network of pastors where we can better serve you and help you. That will be launched formally at this year's briefing, and our communication then will begin funneling through that network so that we can be better stewards of our resources and make sure that the right folks are getting what we are trying to provide. So I want to encourage you to invite pastors that you know to come to this year's briefing and to get connected with the Watchman project, and that could be pastors in your local community that you meet with, or it could be pastors that you know across the country. There's no geographical boundaries with that. So we just want to be here to serve pastors. I am firmly convinced that the hope of the nation, you represent that, and that you represent Christ. We need more than anything else. We don't need a new political party. We don't need a reformed party. What we need is revival in our nation. And that may sound odd coming from someone sitting here just a few blocks from Capitol Hill who's focused on public policy. So I have been, will continue to work to change public policy, but we've got to change people's hearts first. Then we can change the policy with ease, and we can, I believe, preserve the fruits of the revival for a generation or more. That is where you are on the front lines of working and praying and standing for revival in this nation. The two go hand in hand. And so I want to commend you again and thank you for your boldness and your courage. We're here to serve you and help you in doing that. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Keenan, and I think we may have time for a few questions.
Okay, guys, I just want to briefly encourage you again, mark your calendars for this event. It's going to be tremendous. For those of you who have been a part of it, you know what I'm talking about. We start with a spiritual heritage tour of the nation's capital with David Barton, who is the expert on America's Christian heritage and heroes. So you're not going to want to miss that. That's Wednesday night, the first night. And we'll also have a tour of the Family Research Council building and hear a little bit about our ministry. Some of the speakers that we're inviting, it's just a dynamite lineup. We've got George Barna, who tracks Christianity and culture, that we're inviting. Chuck Colson of Present Fellowship. Dr. Henry Blackaby, who wrote Experiencing God and is an author and a great leader. Dr. Irving Kanner, many of you have heard of him. He's a converted Sunni Muslim, and he absolutely explodes in the pulpit. He's awesome. Bishop Harry Jackson and Pastor Herb Lutz. These are tremendous preachers and pastors. Dr. Richard Land of the Southern Baptist Convention. Chuck Swindoll of Insight for Living. Dr. D. James Kennedy of Coral Ridge Ministries. Larry Stockstill. I mean, this is a tremendous lineup. And in addition to that, you'll hear from our policy experts, as well as from guys on the Hill, congressmen, senators, and so forth. So this is one power-packed meeting of pastors, and it's a well-kept secret, unfortunately. We hope that you guys will spread the word, but we really appreciate you promoting this to your fellow pastors.
We've got a few minutes, so I want to be respectful of everybody's time, but we have time for a few questions.
Yes, Tony.
Yes.
This is the Patriot pastor, Garrett Lear in New Hampshire.
Hey, Pastor Garrett.
Great to see all of you in Boston in October. I just wanted to know what the response to Justice Sunday has been.
Well, we had we've gotten a pretty good response from that event, and as that was our seventh simulcast that we did at there at the historic Tremont Temple Baptist Church there in Boston. We continue to get feedback from that, the reason is that as you're on the front lines right there in Lexington, so you understand this, but a lot of folks across the country don't realize that our religious liberties are at stake, that they are at risk, and that has increased exponentially in the last month with the change in power in Congress. We're going to see a lot of policies and initiatives that are going to encroach even further upon our religious freedoms and our freedom of speech. And so I think I guess I would say, if I could sum up what I hear most often is, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know that was happening.
Mm.
So those the CD of that, or DVD of that event is still available. It's on our website. Also, it's available at FRC if you'd like to get a copy of that and show it to your church. It's 1 hour. Many churches did participate in that simulcast. If you'd like to get that and show it, the information still is as relevant today as it was when we filmed that in October.
Tony?
Yes.
This is Robert Wright in Salt Lake City. Is this conference call been recorded so we can download it somewhere and share it with other pastors?
No, it's not.
Okay, thank you.
Tony, I had a quick question for you. I've monitored a fair amount of discussion over Governor Romney and the speculation that he converted from a pro-life position to pro-choice in order to campaign for Senate and governor in Massachusetts, and then has had a convenient reconversion to the pro-life position. So it's raised questions about how sincere his pro-life convictions are. I wondered if you could comment on that for us.
Yeah, I have not. I've heard that. I've read a number of things regarding his position and change of positions. I've not yet met with him. He is one that is scheduled to meet with us coming forth, and those questions will be asked.
Tony Perkins.
Yes.
This is Pastor Lewis Hussard. I'm at Crossgate Church in your old stomping ground, Hammond, Louisiana.
Hey, Pastor Lewis.
Good to hear from you. I appreciate you doing these kind of calls. What's the latest on another Supreme Court justice possibly retiring soon and our president appointing another one? What's the latest on that?
That's an excellent question. Thanks for bringing that up. I probably should have mentioned that. We were, going into the election, we were anticipating an announcement immediately following the election that there may be a retirement. Justice Stevens was one that's anticipated that he may announce his retirement. It has not come. In fact, the rumors have kind of died down a little bit about his retirement or another retirement. So there's nothing really new that's stirring about a retirement, but he's 80. I think he's 86 years old. There's another justice that is not in good health. And so there is there's a very good probability that there will be another vacancy on the United States Supreme Court. I've already had some conversations with the White House, the key members there with the President about the advisor to the President about the direction they may go, because we're very concerned in that with the change of the Senate, that it could be the President would see himself in a weakened position and nominate a an unacceptable candidate. And there is there's a way around that, and I think that's been looked at. And so that's very much on the radar screen, and I remain optimistic that we will be able to get a good candidate. But this could be a fight, a major, major fight, not only because the Senate is now in the hands of those that lean liberal, but because this is the deciding vote on the Senate, on the Supreme Court, rather. You've got four liberal votes, you've got four conservative, and you've got one swing. Justice Kennedy, arguably, is a swing vote. He usually swings to the left, but he swings. With this change, if it's Justice Stevens or Ginsburg, both of those lining up on the left, that would shift the balance. So it will be a major fight.
Tony, have you been totally happy with the Bush 43 appointments?
In the area of the courts?
Yes.
Yes, I think we've made tremendous headway in the courts. Now, I will say, if you read our update, and others even yesterday, we mentioned there are still a lot of vacancies on the courts that have not been addressed. In part, that's the Senate Republican leadership has not pushed forward as hard as we feel like they should have on these judicial nominees and confirmations. And the White House, in some cases, has just not been very quick to suggest candidates for some of these vacancies. But there are a large number of vacancies right now. And this, you know this, I don't need to tell you, but certainly the opposition knows this. That's where these issues are decided. That's how we lost prayer in our schools. That's how we lost the Bible in our schools. That's where we're losing our freedom, is in the courts.
Tony, this is Harris Hines out in Hamilton, Montana.
Yes, sir.
And I'm the pastor of Big Sky Christian Center and also the president of Montana Values Alliance. And we were able to encourage fellow pastors out here to speak from the pulpit on the pros and cons of various candidates, which is still, even as a 501c3, pastors can do that under Alliance Defense Fund guidelines and that sort of thing. And I'm sure that the pastors are aware, but we need to be reminded that the revolution and the abolition movements were both fired up from the pulpits. And I would like to encourage the pastors to recognize that we can and must be more involved in politics. John Adams called it a divine science, and I think that we have neglected that to our very great failure.
Well, Pastor, I agree and I appreciate it. I would say you're absolutely right. Pastors need to be involved in government. We need to speak to society, whether it be in education, whether it be in culture, whether it be in government. And this idea that there's any area that's off limits to the messengers of the gospel and to the servants of the Lord is wrong. I will encourage pastors, if you have questions regarding any of those issues, Alliance Defense Fund is one that we work very closely with. In fact, they will be at our briefing in May, but on our website, you will see a pastors in public policy. If you go there on our website, you'll find you'll find guidelines from the Alliance Defense Fund that gives the pastors guidelines on what they can and cannot do. And part of our relationship with the Alliance Defense Fund, they actually have office space here in our headquarters in Washington, and we work that closely with them, is that they have agreed that if pastors working with us follow the guidelines that their lawyers have put together, that if anything happens, they will represent you for free. And so you do not have to worry about being about standing alone and being attacked by the ACLU or others and being on your own and being defenseless. We will stand with you. The Alliance Defense Fund will stand with you when you stand up and stand for the truth. I think we have time for one more question.
Tony, Pastor Vernon, the Lebanese Christian Church, Kissimmee, Florida. Relating the larger picture, all the things that are presently happening and the positions that are currently being taken and the rights that are taken away from the church, is this a move to accomplish the greater picture, which is to take away from us the freedom of speech, which is the First Amendment to the Constitution? And is this also positioning America to be a part of that 10-member country as it relates to those 10 countries coming together from which the Antichrist will come?
Well, I can handle some of those questions. Some of those go beyond my scope of understanding, but it certainly raises questions. There's no doubt all that we see unfolding points to not only a moral decline, but a rise in a voice of one who is against Jesus Christ, whether that's culture or individual, we're seeing that unfold before us. However, we have been at precipitous points as a country like this before. We have been at places where we didn't understand why this was happening, and the cultural forces were against us, and it did not look good. But God moved in the hearts of His people. We saw revival, and we saw tremendous reform in the socially and culturally. And so I am very optimistic that we can see that once again. But you're right in the focus on speech, free speech, Christian speech, whatever kind of speech you want to talk about, it's free speech. And this is what I think it's strategic by the other side, is that when the marriage issue first came up 3 years ago in Massachusetts, and then you had the mayor out in San Francisco, Mayor Newsom, began to issue marriage license, and you had other jurisdictions start taking up that issue. And it just looked, I remember picking up the phone, calling Alan Sears at the Alliance Defense, and said, we've got to do something. This is, the sky is falling, and that's the way it felt. But you know what happened in the wake of that? We've had 27 states have passed marriage amendments. Actually about 22 since that, I forget the exact number, since that day. About two dozen states have passed marriage amendments. And you know why those amendments passed? Primarily because pastors and churches took the initiative to pass those state amendments. That is significant. In fact, I cannot think of another time in history where states independently have taken up the same issue and passed it in such a short period of time. So what the other side has done, I believe, is strategically retreated from the push for marriage to now go after the source of go after their major opponent. And who is that major opponent? It's the church. And who leads the church? Pastors. And so that's why I think that there is this focus on religious speech, and in particular religious speech, but more generally on free speech. So you're very perceptive, and that's exactly what is at stake here, religious liberties. And if we don't stand up and defend those, there will be no one else left to stand to defend the other rights. And so this is a very, very critical point for us as Christians and as a country. So I cannot overemphasize our need to pray, to seek the Lord. And we had, in our meeting of our pastors' council last month, kind of a reoccurring theme that came up is that there's got to be a better way. When we look back over the last 30 and 40 years and how we went about influencing, and we've made some gains, there's no doubt about it. But we do need to seek the Lord in a better way to influence this country, change the direction and the course of this country. as we come to it as people of religious and Christian conviction. So, again, I want to thank you all for taking the time out, and we will probably, because of events, be doing this more often just to keep you informed on what is happening here in Washington, because I can pretty much assure you the next 6 months there's going to be a lot happening here in Washington, a lot of which puts at risk our faith, our family, and our freedom. So with that, let me close us in a word of prayer.